George, tell us about some of the things that you've seen and heard.
Well, I'll deal with direct voice first, independent direct voice, which you've experienced yourself. It started, as I say, with this lady in South Africa. It was followed by my experiences with Leslie Flint, a famous direct voice medium for over 50 years, 60 years.
Did you go to some of his...
I spent probably 10 years, I think, on a regular basis.
Oh, wonderful.
Once a fortnight. My family communicated. And after a while, you know, when you've had the evidence of survival and so on, you want to know more. And our circle developed, where there was 8 of us used to meet with Leslie regularly, developed into a question and answer session. And we used to question spirit people on, are there seasons, for example, in the spirit world? Can you go ice skating? Do you have tea and biscuits if you feel like it? Things like that.
What do they say?
Questions. Yeah, they answer them all very well.
Well, do they?
You can have anything you like.
Really?
Which, of course, led me to ask various other questions. What is the source of your electricity? But of course, it doesn't work like that. The desire creates the object. The emotional desire for something will allow it to be created.
Is it the emotional desire or or the mental desire? Do we still carry our emotions with us, then?
Certainly, and they're very much heightened.
Really?
Heightened. Well, it might sound like that to you now, but when you get there, you'll find it probably a great help. Because you'll be able to see people for what they really are. No one can escape. Here we can wear a mask, our personality, but there it's revealed to all. You radiate colours. Everyone can read you like a book, as you can read others. And makes you change your life, if only it happened on Earth. And many people have regrets that they didn't live a better life.
Is that the point of life, though, George?
Well, I find you the point of life. I wouldn't be here.
Well, no, that's exactly what my question is really leading to, is whether, you know, we're here to have a fuller realisation of ourselves.
Well, all I can tell you is what the spirit people say from their own knowledge, and, of course, their knowledge changes as they advance. Yeah. But basically, we're here to be of service to others, and to lead as full a life as we can in every way, to use all our talents and abilities, which will prepare us for the life to come, where there are greater opportunities. And as you move on, even greater opportunities. Scientists, chemists, doctors, for example, can all expand their talents tremendously. And many doctors, nurses and people like that come back to help doctors, nurses, healers on Earth.
So they're developing their ideas, if you like, in spirit, or in that dimension.
Yes.
And then they're communicating through people of a similar sort of makeup, if you like, or a chemist or a doctor.
That's right.
And they can put those ideas into that.
The wonderful thing I like about the spirit world, Alan, is that unlike here, you don't have to be with people you don't like. The law of like attracts like is very prevalent there. So you're attracted to people, or you're with people of similar mental and emotional mental abilities and emotional.
That sounds attractive, doesn't it?
It is, very attractive. Wonderful.
So if you were
And what a relief to think, I'll no longer see that person again.
Go on, keep telling us, this is absolutely intriguing, George. Tell us more about
it. I was going to have a sip of this
lovely bottle of whiskey down
that you put down.
Go on then, quickly, and I'll ask you another question whenever you sit
Well,
that.
Recently, with a young man who lives not far from here.
Is this Colin?
I hope you will have him on your programme in due course.
Colin, yes.
I had a 27-minute conversation with a friend who passed over 16 months before.
Do you want to tell us what Colin is? Because we don't know
Colin
yet.
Is a physical medium.
Yeah.
In addition to that, he's also clairvoyant, which is unusual to find two in the same person. But he has a particular talent and a particular gift, which he's put at the service of humanity. And in this particular seance I went along, my friend, who'd been a medium himself for over 60 years, communicated in his own voice, instantly recognisable, came out and shook my hand, kissed my friend's hand, who was sitting next to me, and she said to him, "Oh, hello, Gordon." He turned to her and said, "Oh, hello, my dear," and kissed her on the hand. Now, that may sound like nothing at all, but when he was on Earth, he could never remember her name, always called her my dear, and never kissed her on the cheek or whatever, but only ever on the hand. Which was marvellous evidence in itself.
Yeah.
And he was emotional, he was happy, he was sad, as we discussed many things that we'd arranged to do before he passed. And I have that 27 minutes of it on tape.
Gosh, wonderful.
Wonderful, yeah. That was a classic example of direct voice. Not only have I spoken to all my family, sorry for interrupting you, but I've spoken to my friends, and I know they survive, and I'm aware of their presence all the time.
Right. Does that give you a deep peace, George? That I mean, you're a bit of an old devil, aren't you? I mean, you rustle things up as you go along, but I mean, inside, you must have a deep.
It gives you an inner peace.
Yeah.
I was looking for, I suppose, a philosophy to live by, and I found it, and nothing will shift it.
Yeah.
I have an inner peace, which I can't give to anybody else, but I can only tell them that if they make the investigation in a sincere frame of mind and push, you don't have to be gullible, and you can be sceptical, but don't be openly hostile. Have an open mind. And if you investigate with an open mind, I'm sure, and a sincere mind, you will get the evidence you need.
Absolutely.
And that leads you on to other things, because it then asks you, what about vivisection? What about abortion? Euthanasia? What spiritual principles are involved here?
What you're actually saying is that you're, from that point on, once you're open-minded, once you've accepted the reality of spirit, then you're open also to be enriched, aren't you?
That's
you're
right.
Open to the wisdom that can come from spirit.
Yeah.
Tell us about the time when you saw the full materialization. Tell us about that. Where and when and what
this
was it
took
like?
Place in Johannesburg through a medium called Alec Harris, who was probably one of the most brilliant physical mediums we've ever had.
Mm.
Between him and his wife, they had the gift of materialization. Nothing would happen unless she was present.
Right.
So it was a joint mediumship. And I was invited to a seance through a friend of my mother's who'd been a lifelong spiritualist. And when she discovered my interest in spiritualism, she said, would you like to attend a materialization seance? And I said, yes, please, I'd love to.
Mm.
I received a telegram in Cape Town the following week, said, seance tomorrow night, can you come? I hopped on a plane, flew 1,000 miles to Johannesburg to take part in the seance. Only 8 of us were present. I was in the front row, 4 chairs in front, 4 behind, in front of a little curtained off part of the room, which they use as what we call a cabinet, where the power is conserved for demonstration purposes. And so I sat next to the medium's wife, and we sang as they do, just to harmonize the vibrations.
Does that increase energy as well?
Well, apparently, I don't think it helps spirit people a great deal, because they're pretty harmonious anyway, but it certainly helps to harmonize the minds and the senses of the people present. It creates creates a vibration, obviously, but it creates a harmony and a sense of oneness.
Right, right.
Well, to cut a long story short, the first person to appear was a Red Indian.
Mm. And they actually appeared?
He walked out the cabinet and stood in front of my friend, whose name was Teddy, and she's still alive today. She's well in her 80s now and still living in South Africa. And she said, greetings, Black Feather. And he was had a black feather in a band around the top of his head. He was half naked. And people often ask me, was he naked from the waist up or naked from the waist down?
Mm.
Well, he was naked from the waist up, so put your mind at rest.
Yeah.
And he suddenly turned and said, will the young man from Cape Town come forward? But in a very deep voice, the young man from Cape Town come forward.
Mm.
So I jumped to my feet and went up to him. Now, bearing in mind, I've been told not to touch the materializations unless invited to do so, because in some mysterious way it could damage the medium.
Mm.
Well, now I know why. Because there is a link between the medium, part of his life force, and any sudden shock or movement would mean the ectoplasm out of which these figures are built would shoot straight back into the medium's body and cause him either to have a hemorrhage or something like
that. Electric shock almost.
Yeah, well, even worse than that.
Yeah.
But this Indian said to me, feel my skin. And I put my hand up, very rather trembling, thinking I mustn't be too, in case it falls apart, mustn't be too heavy.
Mm.
And it was copper coloured, leathery to the feel, and I had to reach up, bearing in mind that Alec Harris was a young man. And this Indian then said to me, feel my chest. Mm. I put my hand on his chest, felt it, and it was solid as a rock. I was going to say as solid as yours, but no, I've never felt your chest, Alan.
No. I don't think you've ever answered that one.
Not
at all.
But he said, hit me on the chest. And I did. And he said, harder. And again, I did. He never flinched. And he said, harder still. So I summoned up all my energy and whacked him on the chest. And I was a lot younger then.
Yeah.
He never moved. And then he said, with a slight smile creeping across his face, you may sit down now. And he walked back behind the curtain, having said goodbye.
Mm.
And as he walked behind the side of the curtain, out of the front, appeared a young lady holding in her arms a baby. Mm. Now, how you could convert Alec Harris, a young man of small stature, into a woman with a baby, I don't know.
Right.
No skeptic.
So, I mean, the medium is screened off in a sort of cabin. It's a very small area.
Very small area, indeed. All he was doing was sitting on a chair. He was dressed in black pyjamas, so that any substance that came out could be seen clearly against that background.
Yeah. And out came the lady with the baby.
Yep. And I heard somebody behind me crying, and she held the baby up for all to see. And I discovered later in conversation with somebody that she'd passed while giving birth to the baby. Mother and baby had passed together. Well, the next one that came out was rather astonishing because I couldn't see the man's face. Shrouded in this, like, white covering, I could only see half a face. And again, I heard a lady behind me saying, "Is that you, Uncle Arthur?" And the figure nodded. And I thought, well, that's strange. Why doesn't he speak? And she was sobbing, and the figure disappeared. And she explained afterwards that her Uncle Arthur had cancer of the face. And before he died, half his face had been eaten away. He'd been unable to speak. Mm. A little cockney boy came out and asked me to come forward to feel his nose. I felt his nose, which was squashed flat against his face. Mm. And he said, "Do you know how I got that, mate?" And I said, "No, mate." He said, "I was hit on the nose by a tomato." And I said, "A tomato?" And he went, "Yeah, it was in a can." Well, of course, it made everybody laugh and lifted the atmosphere. And he shuffled around, talked to a few people. Mm. But I suppose the highlight for me was that a man came out wearing the most beautiful robes, and they all followed in very quick succession, and many relating the ones that related to me. I seemed to be the only one who was called up that night. Mm. But he stood in front of me, and somebody said, "And who are you?" He said, "The young man from Cape Town, come forward." And I was literally closer to him than I am to you.
Mm.
And I said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am one of your guides, your helper."
Mm.
And I said, "What's your name? Will you tell me?" And he told me his name, which nobody's managed to pick up yet, and where he came from. And we had a conversation for between 10 and 15 minutes.
Gracious me.
Now, can you imagine? Here is this solid being. And I thought to myself, well, somehow or other, I've got to get hold of you.
Mm.
And I said, "Could I touch your robes?" And he said, "No, please don't." That I will show you, and he opened his arms wide, showing his most beautiful robes. And I said, "Would it be mind if I held your hands?" Mm. I wanted to feel what they felt like.
Yeah.
He said, "Certainly." And then I thought, now I've got hold of your hands, I thought, I'm not letting go until I get to the bottom of this.
Mm.
Little realizing that your mind is an open book.
Yeah.
And we chatted for about, anything 10 to 15 minutes, and he said, "You know, you're going to do this work for the spirit world, etc. In the years to come, you and I will work together." And I thought, what a load of rubbish.
Mm.
I couldn't speak in public. I wouldn't have dreamt of speaking in public. And he said, "We will work together, you will see," and so on.
Mm.
And he went on to explain the things that were going to happen in the future, which have all come to pass, as he predicted. Then he suddenly said, "Well, I've got to go now." And I held his hands, and I thought, well, I'm not letting go. But something made me look down at his feet, and I watched the bottom half of his body dissolving. Just like vanishing.
Really.
I still held his hands, half the body had gone. And then I still had my fist clenched, and it just melted away through my fingers. I was left with clenched fists as his head sunk slowly to the floor.
That must have been absolutely categorical proof to you then. I mean, you needed to...
Well, it was fascinating.
You needed to experience that, didn't you?
I mean,
you
needed.
Because
yes.
You could have still been doubting that the people coming from behind the curtain would have made...
There he was going in front of my eyes.
But as he was
not behind the curtain, but in front of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and the head went down to the floor. Just the head left and said, going.
Yeah.
Right at the end.
So you really are... I mean, you've been very blessed, George, haven't you, to have had those experiences?
Oh, yes.
I think you have.
Not many of us left.
No.
Well, I'll tell you what happened at the end, Alan, if I may. Just
please do, yeah.
The curtains parted. And a voice said, "We have no more time, now our time's gone." And 3 hours went by while this took place. From the medium's solar plexus, we could see him slumped in the chair. This great cloud of ectoplasm came, forming a huge mass to the left and another mass to the right, and hundreds of miniature faces appeared in the ectoplasm.
Gosh,
and a voice said, "These are just a few of the people who are here tonight, but have been unable to communicate."
Great.
Curtains closed with unseen hands, and it was all over.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, wonderful experience, George. I could sit here listening forever. We haven't got the time.
Sounds good.
One thing I'd like to ask you particularly, and it actually troubles me, so it doesn't trouble me, but I'm curious about it. Why is it always conducted in the dark?
I was waiting for that question.
Yeah, well, you said earlier on, actually, you did hear direct voice from the, in the light, which was unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, it's not always conducted in the dark. The seance I've just described to you was conducted in red light. Mm. There were six red light bulbs in the room. Yeah. So it was as clear as this room is now.
Right.
I could see everything. Yeah. Certainly in the early stages when they're developing, it is explained to us that white light is extremely harmful to ectoplasm.
Mm.
Red light is not so dangerous. Mm. Blue light seems to be okay. Some mediums have worked with blue lights. And a very rare few have developed to such a stage that materializations can be seen in the light.
Mm.
But as far as direct voice goes, there's no reason why it should be in the light any more than in the dark.
Right.
You know, because it's the evidence that counts. Yes. It's what you hear. You're using your ears.
Yes.
Materialization, unless you can see what's happening, it's rather pointless being in the dark.
Well, I actually have heard direct voice in the light. I didn't actually, I wasn't in the room, but I heard this. We left a house once, this voice was talking to us, and I said to this chap when we went out, that chap wanted to have a word with you, you know. Who is he? And he said, oh, he said, that's, I can't remember his name, he's a Frenchman or something, Francoise or something. Yeah. I said, well, he wanted to tell you something. Why didn't you go in there? He said, Francoise is dead. He said, but he often talks to us.
Mm.
And it was as loud again as you're talking to me.
At the end of one seance, I remember quoting the famous medium D.D. Hume. Somebody said to the communicator, "If only you were here to have heard what had happened." And the voice replied, "We are not dead.
Mm. Mm.
They're not dead."
Right. What a lovely point to end on.